tomorrow, the Incredible Hulk joins the fast-growing list of comic book superheroes to cross over to the movies. The most recent wave includes Spider-Man, Daredevil, and the X-Men, and like the others, the Hulk has superpowers. If you're unfamiliar with this Jekyll and Hyde character, he's the alter ego of nerdy scientist Bruce Banner. When he gets angry, this mild-mannered scientist becomes a 9-foot-tall monster whose worldview can be summed up in the phrase, Hulk smash. Oh, and he also turns green. There are scientific-sounding explanations for each superhero's superpower, and rather than suspend disbelief, Bob Weinberg and Lois Gresh are examining the plausibility of these uncanny abilities in a new book called The Science of Superheroes, and they join us now. Bob Weinberg's on the line, on the phone with us from Oak Forest, Illinois, and Lois Gresh joins us from the studios of member station WXXI in Rochester, New York, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
If any of you have ever wanted to crawl the wall and wondered where you might find a radioactive spider, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And Lois, the background story for Mr. Banner in the comic book involves something called the G-bomb, a gamma ray bomb, which exposes him to these rays, which trigger these changes in him. This is totally off the wall, isn't it?
Well, we think so. Basically, gamma rays don't cause mutations; they kill people. And we figure Banner was exposed to at least 800 rems, which is how one measures gamma radiation. And at 800 rems, it causes death. So we don't think that the Hulk would be caused by a gamma bomb explosion, basically.
But you suggest that if Bruce Banner had studied biology instead of physics, that he might have come up with a way to be the Hulk anyway.
Well, yes, Bob and I have come up with an alternate way that the Hulk could actually be a reality. And basically what we figure is our Bruce Banner is studying steroids, and anabolic steroids are artificial ones. And as many people know who have followed bodybuilders and so forth, the steroids in our bodies come from the adrenal glands, and they cause, if taken in large doses, they cause things like loss of hair, large muscles, change in body shape, fear, anger, mood switches, rage, all these things that the Hulk has. So if indeed our Bruce Banner were into biology or microbiology and happened to be studying methods of creating super strong anabolic steroids, which he then, of course, tested on himself because that's what superheroes do, he might get huge muscles, lose his hair, and fly into rages.
And Bob Weinberg, if he was into food dye too, he might turn green.
Well, we actually came up with one better than that. We thought that the Hulk is a rather distinctive green, and if you've seen any of the trailers for the movie, he's a green that once you see it, you don't forget it. So what we did instead is we mentioned our book, the experiments of a fairly controversial artist, Eduardo Kac, who his most controversial creation is something called transgenic art, where it combines science and art. And he had French scientists take the genes of jellyfish that glow in the dark, and he had these implanted into a rabbit embryo. And when the rabbit was born, it glows green in the dark.
Really?
And he has this rabbit. The name of the rabbit is Alba, and it's his pet rabbit. And if you put it under the right dark light, it doesn't glow all the time, it will glow green. And so we thought Banner might have heard about these experiments and found them as fascinating as we did, and mixed up a batch of chemicals himself and injected himself, of course. And so whenever he gets angry, that would set off the green fluorescence in him, and he would glow green whenever he became the Hulk.
We're speaking with Bob Weinberg and Lois Gresh about their new book, The Science of Superheroes, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some listeners involved. Terrence is on the line with us from Durham, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, and I've been a comic book collector for about 20 years. And my question is, how do they explain laser is coming from Cyclops' eyes.
Cyclops is one of the X-Men, for those who don't have a basement full of such things as Terrence and I do. But the answer, Lois, any idea of how lasers can shoot out of a man's eyes?
Well, we haven't covered Cyclops in this book. We basically talk about genetic mutations and how this could occur over time. Bob, do you have any idea how Cyclops shoots lasers out of his eyes?
I
have one, actually. If he has microelectronic or nanotech devices, which would be coupled with genetic mutation in our future as human beings, then indeed something like implanted in his brain, like neurotrophic electrodes, which are used today. Sorry, Bob, I just thought of something on the fly here. These neurotrophic electrodes today actually transmit something like shoot laser beams out of my eyes in our Cyclops' world to receivers and transmitters on the scalp wirelessly, which then communicate with computers. In today's world, this can be done. So possibly if there are implants in Cyclops' eyes, Bob, write this down for our next book, the sequel. Then possibly he could indeed shoot lasers by simply thinking that he wants to.
Nice to listen into the creative process here.
Yes, it is.
This is how we do it.
Yeah. But, Bob, we're normally concerned with people shooting lasers into your eyes, just to correct the vision.
That's usually the case. And one of the points that we make in the book is that the problem, of course, with a lot of comic books is that the idea comes first, and someone will say, well, we have a bunch of mutants, let's give them extraordinary powers. And the thought is not, how would those powers work, as much as these powers would look really cool,
yeah,
or would do wonderful things. And much later on, somebody says, you know, we don't have an explanation, can we come up with one? And that's where it starts getting a lot harder. So some mutants, especially among the X-Men, it's fairly easy to explain their powers. They're just, you know, extrapolations on today's science, where some other powers, Cyclops' eyes don't bother me that much on how they would work as much as how they would develop. If he woke up one day and suddenly had this vision, what would he do? Walk around with his eyes closed for a few years until he found the right type of glasses to wear that would kind of hide his eyes from everybody else's sight? And there are logical problems with a lot of the mutations, much more than scientific problems.
Well, Terrence, thanks very much for the call, and we can both live in the belief that there's a cure out there for us.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye, Terrence.
Bye-bye.
Let's get one caller in before we have to leave. Sam joins us from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that it seems like a lot of the superheroes are kind of like unique creations, and that you know, whatever event happens to them is singular in this unique circumstances, so that it's never repeated. Otherwise, why wouldn't there be 50 Hulks or a dozen Spider-Mans?
Hmm. That's interesting. If there was a plague of radioactive spiders, New York City would be in big trouble.
Yeah, like in the original comic book, when Spider-Man's bitten by the spider, it's not like a caged specimen. It's a random spider that walks into an experiment. It crawls off and dies, so there could never be another Spider-Man.
Well, Bob, one of the interesting things that you point out in your book is that, you know, before the Second World War, there were different kinds of superheroes. The quintessential one, of course, Superman, a strange visitor from another planet. After the war, though, and after the atomic bomb, all this radiation stuff came in.
That is always the case, that now, whatever is popular in science and whatever is popular also in pop culture becomes one of the cornerstones of superheroes. Since radiation fears and fears of atomic war were so prevalent in the 50s and 60s, it seemed like every hero was somehow or another running into an atomic bomb blast, or there was an underground test going on nearby, or something else like that was happening.
And that was the critical factor in all of this. But thanks very much for speaking with us today. We appreciate it. Bob Weinberg and Lois Grash are the authors of The Science of Superheroes, and they joined us, Bob from Oak Forest, Illinois, Lois from WXXI in Rochester, New York. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.